All right, good morning. Thank you for attending session 134, titled Bringing Book of Mormon Artifacts to Augmented Reality. Before we begin, we have a few announcements. We ask that cell phones are turned off and that those attending will be respectful and attentive. At Sunstone, we want this experience to be more than just a conference. We want you to interact and get involved. Sunstone is a community. We challenge you to make a new friend today, to reach out to someone who is here alone, and to leave a piece of yourself with the community. Please use today as an opportunity to expand your intellectual and social horizons. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desks on the main floor. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to Sunstone Magazine at the registration desk as well. Concessions will be open in the venue for lunch, or you are welcome to visit local restaurants in the area. Please return by 1:45 to get a seat in the next session. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can allow for the next session to start on time. As you can see from your programs, this presentation description is as follows. Through the power of augmented reality, the Book of Mormon artifacts come to life. Learn how the gold plates, the Urim and Thummim, or the breastplate and spectacles, and other artifacts were modeled in 3D using historical research and eyewitness accounts. See how these and other artifacts can be viewed on your mobile device as if they existed in the real world. Steve Otteson is a software developer who lives in Redmond, Washington. His interests outside of software include Mormon history, biblical academics, and early Christianity. Combining his interests in 3D software and Mormon history resulted in Book of Mormon AR, a mobile application for viewing and interacting with Book of Mormon artifacts in augmented reality. We will now turn the time over to the presenter.
Thank you. So like you said, my name is Steve Otteson. My day job, I'm a software developer at Microsoft, but I always find creative outlets to do on the side that don't necessarily have to do with my job, but I love creativity. That's my favorite part of software engineering. And I've always been a fan of Mormon history and these Mormon artifacts. We'll talk about that. So first of all, why augmented reality? And what even does that mean? So augmented reality lets you look, for example, with your phone or another device at the real world and then project a 3D model or more than one 3D model into that space as if something was really sitting on your desk or on the floor and let you walk around and look at it and possibly interact with it as if it was really there. And when you do that, you get a better sense for the size of something. For example, the gold plates. We have witness accounts of what the sizes were and the dimensions. So when you put that on a table or a desk, you can walk around and you can see, okay, what do witnesses say that looked like? And it's kind of like in a museum. If you go to the Church History Museum, they've got a great replica of the gold plates, and we'll talk about that later. But it kind of lets you bring the museum to you. And I'm thinking museums are going to do this more and more, where they can have artifacts that they have for real that you can look on your mobile phone. It's becoming a great tool in education as well. So why Book of Mormon artifacts? Mormonism has a lot of interesting objects from its early history. And some of these are still around, like Joseph Smith's seer stone, which the LDS Church just published photos of a few years ago. And some were described by witnesses, but are no longer visible. For example, the gold plates or the liahona, the breastplate and spectacles. And so I first had the idea of seeing the gold plates in virtual reality. And again, what would it look like on your table or your desk? And then I thought of other things that would be interesting, and I realized all the items that were interesting to me had to do something with the Book of Mormon. So I said, okay, I'll do a Book of Mormon theme of these artifacts to do in augmented reality. So this is an example I just did quickly with my youngest is behind my shoulder kind of videotaping or recording as I do this. So let me play this for you. So on the app, you enter augmented reality. You get to choose which items go on the So this is my counter at home. I can move the gold plates around. I can start flipping through the plates. I can open the Liahona, and I can move it around and basically place objects however I want and then take a picture as well. You can get closer, look at the engravings on the plates. Somehow my pets always end up in my demo, so here's Caesar. And now here's the stone box from the Hill Cumorah. And it's cool because you walk up to it and you can look down in that hole and it looks like you've actually got a hole in your floor and you can look at the items in there. So then I took a picture. So that was the final, how that turned out. Okay, so like I said, the very first thing I wanted to do was make the gold plates. And I'd never done this before, and I wasn't sure, like, is a phone powerful enough? Is it going to look realistic? Will the technology be good enough? I just didn't know. So I wanted to do something quickly, so I started working on modeling gold plates. Richard Bushman, I've heard him give this talk a couple times. He's the author of Rough Stone Rolling, and he's a believing LDS historian. And he's been giving this talk about how the gold plates has kind of captured the imagination, both within and outside the church. And there's been many depictions and models made over the years by plates, both LDS and non-LDS. This is one from LDS Gospel Art. And I just want you, as I start showing you a picture of the gold plates, notice there's often a steel portion, and most artistic depictions use these metal bands, as you can see there. And we'll talk about that as we go. So I always find this entertaining. Richard Bushman is showing a picture from South Park as well, just showing that, yes, the gold plates have entered into American culture, and it's, you know, obviously they're not LDS, but this is something they find interesting enough to put in their art. And then, so I started researching replicas that have been made over the years. This is one from, I found this in the New Era of 2007. And this was made for the Museum of Church History and Art. And again, so now look how different that seal portion looks. It looks like it's solid, right? It's encased in, it looks kind of waxy. And the top third is unsealed and the bottom two thirds are sealed. So this is one, this is the newest replica, and this is currently in the LDS Church History Museum. And again, about one-third unsealed, two-thirds sealed in a solid. And this one is made of beeswax and pine pitch, and we know that because the man who made the replica for the LDS Church described how he made it. And something I thought was interesting, so the top plate, and on the other side, there's another plate. Those are the only two metal plates he made. And the rest are gold-painted paper. But it looks really good. It's, you know, in a replica, it's hard to realize that unless you get really close and check it out. So I think he did a really good job of how that replica looks in the Church History Museum. And this is a close-up. He used a Dremel to actually engrave that. And he said it was super hard. He was glad he only had to do basically two plates because he said it took a long time. And he said he gained an appreciation for how Mormon must have struggled to engrave the plates. Okay, so I've been talking about the seal portion. So again, here's another artistic depiction. Notice the plates are sealed in metal bands. But what's interesting is no witness has ever talked about the metal bands like that. So that's something artists have come up with. And one really good witness we have is David Whitmer said, "What there was sealed appeared as solid to my view as wood." So, again, if you think back to the Church History Museum's version, now it's sealed in that beeswax and pine pitch. So that is closer to what the witnesses said than what we usually see in drawings with the metal bands. And so on my application, you can actually switch between a version with metal bands or a more solid-looking version. And so, you know, I'm a pretty good programmer. I'm not a great artist, so I have to fake it a lot. I could not figure out how to paint a texture that looked realistic for my solid. So I finally said, okay, I'm going to do what the church history guy did, and I'm going to make a model, although I was going to make a scale model. So, and that way I could photograph that texture to put up my plates. So I looked online and found a recipe for this thing called pine pitch glue or cutler's resin. And in the recipe, it calls for beeswax and pine resin. And you melt these together. And then once you melt it and you take it off the heat, you need to act really fast because it is super sticky and super hard. And naturalists actually use this recipe for, like, if they're making, they want to steal an arrowhead or other things, because it's super durable and is really, really strong. So I was just going to make a half-scale model. I didn't need to make a full model because I'm just taking the pictures, and then on my 3D model it will get larger as I enlarge it. But I still wanted the texture. So I took some cardboard, and I cut them and made them into the scale size of the steel portion. And again, it's a half size, but that's okay. And then I covered that in tin foil. And then I started melting the beeswax, which is what the chunks that you see, and the pine resin, which is the powder. And the pine resin is literally like pine pitch, just kind of in powdered form. And you can buy that online. And so you start to melt it, and it smells really great. It smells like you're in a pine forest. But you also recognize that's pine pitch. And if you've ever been camping in the woods and you got that pine pitch on your fingers, you know it's super hard to come off. And it's super sticky, sticks to everything. So I was a little nervous doing this in my kitchen. I purposely bought a pan I knew I would never use again. Like, I bought that at a consignment store because I said, that pan's going to be thrown away. So same with the spatula. This was all stuff just going to be used for this. And so it did melt pretty well. And then that's where it's totally melted. And so then I just use a spatula and spread it on that tinfoil covered cardboard. And so when I'm done, I have this nice little block that's got a kind of cool texture on it. And so I photograph that, and that's what you see on the model of the gold plates if you choose to look at the gold plates with a solid seal portion. Okay, so the characters are interesting. Probably most of you are familiar with the characters that are on this piece of paper, but let me just explain a little bit. So Martin Harris, he was the very first scribe for the Book of Mormon and the scribe for most of the 116 pages. But when he first started, he wanted to know that this was legitimate. So he asked Joseph Smith if he could transcribe some of what the Book of Mormon calls Reformed Egyptian onto a piece of paper. And so he said, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to find an expert that can tell me if this is legitimate or not. And so he found this Professor Anton, and he took these characters to Professor Anton and showed it to him. Now, what's interesting is that the accounts differ widely between the two of what happened. So Martin Harris said that Professor Anton looked at it and said, oh, these look like true characters from various languages, and the translation is as correct as I've ever seen, and I'll even give you a certificate and sign my name to that to say that's true. And so he did that, and then Martin Harris said that Professor Anton asked him, well, where did you get these characters? And he explained the story of the gold plates and angels, and Professor Anton was indignant and tore it up and said, you know, he didn't believe in angels or gold plates, and so he couldn't go along with that. Now, Professor Anton's story is way different. He said, look, I think you're being fooled. I think you're being deceived. This looks like gibberish, and you shouldn't go along with this. Maybe it's somewhere in the middle. I don't really know. Another interesting thing is Professor Anton said that the piece of paper he had a kind of a Mayan calendar wheel on it. And so because of that, we're pretty sure this is a copy of a copy, so that the original document was lost. And if you remember Mark Hoffman doing his forgeries, this was something he forged, was something that looked like what Professor Anton described with the Mayan circle. So it's interesting. Mark Hoffman was really good at tapping into Mormon history and thinking of, okay, that's a lost document. I could probably forge that. And so that's what he forged. So anyway, these are the kind of characters I wanted to put on my gold plates. Now, the problem with these characters is you look, they're really big at the top, and they get really tiny as they go. It's like whoever was copying this from the original started running out of space, but they wanted to write more characters. And so each line gets smaller and smaller and smaller because they don't want to waste any characters, but they're just writing smaller and smaller. But of course, you can imagine if you had real gold plates, they wouldn't do that. They'd probably be more consistent. And so what I did is I took the original characters document into Photoshop, and then I tried to make some consistent characters. I tried to kind of follow a similar style, make them a similar size. And then for my 3D model, I needed pages of that stuff. And I was dragging characters one by one, and I realized I'm never going to finish. This is taking way too long. But computers are great at doing tedious work, so that's what they're good for. So I wrote a little program that could take my kind of the reference at the bottom and just grab random characters and fill up plates. And I taught the program, okay, here's where the holes go, so don't put any characters there. And here's how wide it is, and where all the characters are. And so it could just spray random characters. Now, if it was a real language, of course, some characters would be more common than others, but I didn't worry about that. I just said, basically, take a random character, place it on a line, and keep going until you run out of space. And I made 5 of those textures, and when the 3D model starts to show on your desk, it will randomly pick one of those 5 textures. And so it kind of gives you a feeling of you're looking at a bunch of plates that are random, even though there's actually only 5. And so here's a texture that is used by the model, one of the 5 plate textures. And again, this was just randomly generated. I think it'd be impossible to do that by hand, or it'd take a long time. I guess the guy had to do that did the actually carved it, so kudos for him for doing that by hand. That must have been painful. Okay, so here's a picture of my version. And again, you can switch on the fly between, you see the metal, sealed by metal plates on the right, and the sealed by a solid on the left. Joseph Smith once gave the dimensions of a plate 6 inches by wide by 8 inches high, and also the entire stack was 6 inches high. And so that, and then people said that 2/3 were sealed and 1/3 unsealed. So, and then I had to figure out, well, how thick do I make the plates? And I found an article by he's an engineer and an LDS engineer, and he was trying to figure out, well, what could the plates have been made of, and how thick would they need to be within the parameters? Witnesses said they're between 30 and 60 pounds. And so there's an alloy called tumbaga, and that's an alloy of mostly copper and some gold, and that was actually used in Central America. So that fits. And using his formula for the tumbaga that he came up with, it just barely fits in 60 pounds. So I kind of followed that model, and that's how I decided how thick they would be. And it ends up making 60 unsealed plates. And in the app, you can flip them to either side. You just tap a plate, and it will flip to either side. So this is a demo of a program called Maya. This is what a lot of 3D modelers use. And I am not a 3D modeler by trade. I've kind of self-taught. I would probably be embarrassed if I had a real 3D modeler watch me work. He'd probably say, "What are you doing?" But kind of fun to figure out something new. So this was a plate I modeled. You can zoom in and look around. And when you're modeling, you can take stuff away and bring up something else. So here's the solid version. That's the texture I got, again, from making my little beeswax and resin model. And then here's the metal bands. You can ignore the writing on it. On the program I pulled them into, the texture is different, so you wouldn't see the writing on there. But those were really easy to model. and now the D-ring. So there was a witness that said the rings were D-shaped, which actually is really great for turning the plates. And then you can bring the plate back. You only really need one plate, because once you have a 3D model in, you know, and I think of that when I see an epic battle with, you know, like Lord of the Rings, right? You see thousands of characters, and there's probably only really 3 or 4 orc models, and they can size them, but, you know, you don't need to redo the same model over and over. In computers, you can just duplicate it really quickly. And so then the plate has to know how to animate itself. So in 3D animation, you have a thing called a timeline. As you scrub across that timeline, this plate knows how to animate itself from on the stack to not on the stack. And then that gets exported to the other application where you put it all together. So the Liahona is the second thing I thought would be cool. This is a classic picture by Arnold Freeberg, and I love this picture. You've got Lehi and Nephi, just amazed how beautiful it is, and Laman looks really skeptical. I'm assuming that's Laman. He's kind of got his hands on his hips and not looking too happy. It's first mentioned in 1 Nephi 16:10, and it came to pass that as my father rose in the morning and went forth to the tent door, to his great astonishment he beheld upon the ground a round ball of curious workmanship, and it was of fine brass. Within the ball were 2 spindles, and the one pointed the way whither we should go into the wilderness. So even as a kid, I always thought, 2 spindles, I wonder, like it says one points where to go, I always wonder what the other one does. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to have 2 spindles on my Liahona, but what does the second one do? Recently I found an article by someone who speculated, well, maybe if they weren't both pointing in the same direction, then it told you weren't being faithful and it wasn't working. But I don't know. To me, that was speculation. I don't think we can know for sure. I looked up different depictions of Liahona over the years. Seems to be a really popular thing in LDS circles to have the Liahona on a keychain or a necklace or an artifact to look at. A couple of these you can buy a Deseret Book or like the Church History Museum. There's a metal one that's more expensive and a plastic one that I have. I like the meme, Mormons using GPS before it was cool. You know, maybe it worked by GPS, I don't know. So on my version, I have one spindle points at restoration sites. You can choose different sites. So I have the Salt Lake Temple, the Kirtland Temple, the Nauvoo Temple, I think even Jerusalem. I may be missing one. And then the other spindle just points north like a magnetic compass. So as you put it on the table, you can switch where the gold one points to a restoration site and the silver one points north and south. Last fall, I was at John Whitmer Historical Association in Independence, and I went to the temple lot. Oh, that's the one I missed. Funny. The Community of Christ Temple. So I wanted to see if the Liahona would point there, and it's hard to see, but the gold pointer is pointing to the temple across the street. This is a great, if you ever get to Independence, this is great, because there's the temple lot that Joseph Smith said the temple would be built on, and Church of Christ Temple Lot owns this lot, and they don't have a temple on it, but they've got a nice visitor center and always someone friendly to talk to right there. And then across the street is the Community of Christ Temple. And then kitty corner from that is an LDS visitor center. So, and then within Independence, there's so many restoration expressions. It's really amazing just to Google that and drive around Independence. And some of these are breakoffs from the RLDS Church, which became Community of Christ. And the Cutlerites have I think there's maybe only 10 of them left. They've got a building that I believe they do temple ordinances in there, but they don't really explain what goes on there, and that's okay. But it's a cool place. I really like Independence. So the Urim and Thummim, also known as the breastplates and spectacles, this was a set of seer stones or some kind of stone bound by silver bows in a set of spectacles. And early on, they never called it the Urim and Thummim. That came quite a bit later, and maybe to make it sound more like something from the Old Testament. But William Smith, brother of Joseph Smith, said the spectacles attached the breastplate with a rod on the left shoulder, which is interesting because this artist put it on the right shoulder. And when I originally made my model, I put mine on the right shoulder, and then I found William Smith's quote, and I said, oh, now I got to change it. But fortunately, 3D is really easy to just change it, so it wasn't that hard. Lucy Mack Smith said she saw the breastplate and that it was solid gold. So, interesting. Some depictions. The one on the left, I believe that's a diorama the LDS Church made. And I read somewhere it's in the Joseph Smith building. I don't know if it's still there. But that's another replica of the gold plates. And then, Urim Thummim, there's the breastplate and the spectacles. And some of the people said they were diamonds, so I'm not sure if that's where the triangles are coming from. It's interesting that there's two different depictions that have triangles in them. Did she say there were triangles? Three-quarter diamonds. Okay. And then I found someone, I looked like he was going to maybe put them in a video game, like in a mod maybe, right? The one on the right is kind of a low polygon model of the Urim and Thummim with a kind of glasses right in the middle. So my version, I've got a breastplate and the spectacles are just attached right on there. So I learned the hard way. I should stick to know what I do best, which is programming. I'm really good at programming, but the art was really hard. So I found this guy's breastplate and I tried to cut it in half and it didn't look right. And then I found on this website, I realized, well, I could email that guy and offer him some money to customize it for me. And I said, okay, I'm just going to lowball him and just see what he says. Like, I'm going to offer like $20. And he said, sold. I'll have it in an hour. I'm like, really? And he did the breastplate first. And I said, well, when I turn it around, the texture's not quite right and it's not looking right. And so I explained what I needed. And he's like, okay, another $5. I said, great. So it's like, just sent him little pennies of money. And he could barely speak English, so I don't know. His English was not good in the emails. I don't know where he lived, but he was really great. And then I tried doing the spectacles myself, and it was even worse. It was just disastrous, and it didn't look good at all. And so I realized his prices were pretty low, and so I think I showed him like some of these pictures, right? I said, I need something like that the spectacles there. And literally within an hour or two, he sent me those spectacles. And the texture's great, and he twists the metal. And I couldn't have done that in a month if I tried to. And I was so grateful to have someone that knew what he was doing and could do that so quickly. So another thing I thought would be easy to model would be Joseph Smith's seer stone. In 2015, the LDS Church released photos of the seer stone, which I thought was great. What's interesting is I started zooming these pictures. You can actually see thumbnail prints, like in the rock. So are those Joseph Smith's? I don't know. But that's pretty cool that they have that much detail in the photos that you can see this is something people handled a lot. You know, it was really held a lot. Most Mormon historians say this was used for all the extant texts of the Book of Mormon. So the spectacles were used for the 116 pages, and then those were taken away for disobedience. And then after that, Joseph Smith uses a seer stone. And according to Michael Quinn, Joseph Smith's contemporaries began referring to the seer stone as the Urim and Thummim sometime after 1828. And that gets really confusing because now we've got the breastplate and spectacles called the Urim and Thummim. And also the seer stone can be called the Urim and Thummim. So that's very confusing to know when someone says Urim and Thummim, what they mean. This is a cool translation display. This is pretty new at the LDS Church-owned priesthood restoration site in Pennsylvania. And you'll notice there's a white top hat, and that's what witnesses said that Joseph Smith put the rock in for translation. And they've got the plates covered in a cloth so that we know from witnesses the plates were always covered or possibly buried in the backyard. They were never out in the open. And here's some paper that a scribe would have been writing down as the Book of Mormon was transcribed. I think it's interesting they don't have a model of the seer stone in this display. I would never expect them, of course, to have the real seer stone there. It's way too valuable, but you think they'd at least get a...
The explanation I've been given of that by the people who designed this was that Joseph Smith was carrying the seer stone on his person.
Right.
Which we have more than one account of that, so that's why it's not...
That's true, but then Martin... So he said that Joseph Smith carried the seer stone on his person, which is true, but then Martin Harris did say... He switched at one time. So he must not have always had it on his person because Martin Harris switched it for another rock and Joseph Smith tried using it. He said, oh, it's dark as Egypt. So
he must have left it in the
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it had to be that rock or else it didn't work. So we know that. I personally think that was for Martin Harris's benefit because I think he was wanted to know, is this thing really magical? And for his sake, I think he needed it to be. So on my application, the hat was super easy. I got you can buy some 3D models very cheaply, and I bought this hat. It had a bow that looked really bad, so that's the one thing I had to do is take the bow off. And so then I said, okay, I can model a rock. How hard can a rock be, right? It's a round. And I got the shape really good. And then I started doing the texture. And again, it's not my forte. I fought that thing, and I finally found a guy. Actually, I mailed him months ago. Before I got here, and he wanted $300. So remember, the other guy was like $20 for the breastplate, right? And the guy wants $300. And I thought, I'm not even going to make that money back. So I'm just going to do it. So I tried doing the texture. It was a horrible failure. I could not do it. And so I finally emailed the guy back, and I said, would you take half that? And he said, sure. So I was super grateful to get his model because it looks pretty good. And if you compare it to the seer stone, the texture's not exactly right, but the size is really close, and it works pretty good. I considered making something happen if you put the seer stone on the hat, like maybe it glows or has some text or there's scripture or something, and I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. You can slide, because you can move all these items around on your desk. You can slide it in the hat, but nothing happens. You can then look in the hat and see the rock, but that's about all you can do. So the last thing I wanted to do was the stone box at Hill Cumorah. And all accounts I found say it contained the breastplate and the spectacles, later called the Urim and Thummim, and the gold plates. So that much we know. One account, which was it's a really late reminiscence of someone who interviewed Joseph Smith Sr., and he's relating this decades later, says he was told the box contained the Liahona and the Sword of Laban. And I think he could be confusing this with the three witnesses said they saw those things. So maybe either Joe Smith Sr. got confused or he got confused with what he heard. Catherine Smith, sister of Joseph Smith, decades later, she was part of the restoration. And she said, I quote, the box contained, quote, the Urim and Thummim and the sword and breastplate of Laban and the brass plates Lehi brought from Jerusalem. So that's interesting. So now she's got both Urim and Thummim and a breastplate of Laban. So I would love to know what she thought the Urim and Thummim meant. Maybe she's thinking of the spectacles, or maybe, you know, again, there's that confusion. What does that mean? And then the brass plates. So that's, I never heard that before. So that would have been a massive box to hold all that stuff. But that's interesting. She gave that testimony quite late in her life. So again, it's a late reminiscence. And I'd never really seen this illustration before. This guy's got a website, clarkkellyprice.com, and I thought it was a great depiction, and it looked like something I could model. Like, okay, I can do the plates next to the breastplate and the spectacles. I can do that. Another classic picture that I grew up with, Moroni bearing the plates. It doesn't look like any of the plates are sealed, which I find interesting. Looks like that box is only big enough for the plates, which is interesting. But it's a beautiful picture. So this is a very interesting account. Oliver Cowdery in the Messenger and Advocate, and I found this website where this person had quoted this, and he tried drawing what Oliver Cowdery described, and here's what Oliver said. This box was sufficiently large to admit a breastplate, such as was used by the ancients to defend the chest, etc., from the arrows and weapons of their enemy. From the bottom of the box, from the breastplate, arose three small pillars composed of the same description of cement used on the edges. And upon these three pillars was placed the record of the children of Joseph. But I could not for the life of me figure out how I could get three pillars to sit on the breastplate that I had and then have the plates on top of it. I thought, there's no way it would support the weight. It would just look weird. And I think even as illustration, it kind of makes my point. Like, I think the first image doesn't look physically possible. So, I don't know. That's how he did it. I decided I wasn't going to do the pillars. But it's interesting anyway to read Oliver's account and to hear, again, another layout for the box. So my version, I bought some 3D models of stones and sculpted them to fit them together like they were some too wide. And again, in 3D, it's really easy to squish things and elongate them. So that was easy. And then I already had my models for the gold plates and the Urim and Thummim, and I just had to move the goggles on top of the chest. And again, 3D is very easy to move stuff around. So the hardest part was making it realistic on the floor. So imagine if you put this on your counter, which you can do, and you put that on your counter, and it looks like you're looking at your counter. But if you were to go underneath the counter, suddenly you would see the plates and the Urim and Thummim hanging down, and it looked really odd. So I didn't want that to happen. So I needed to find a way to, it's called occlusion in 3D. I wanted to occlude that stuff so it didn't appear. So that was the hardest thing, and I was afraid it wasn't going to be possible, but I finally figured it out. And I was really glad because I'd spent a lot of time on that, and I wanted that to work. So the technology is not perfect. I found that Apple devices work better for me than Android. And I did buy kind of a cheap Android device, but it was on the list that was supported by the AR software I was using, and it got confused and couldn't figure out the plates would go really tiny and really big, and it just did not work well. It doesn't work great in all situations, like if there's low lighting or surface with just a single color, that doesn't work great. And sometimes the technology gets confused of how close a surface is, so the plates can get teeny, teeny, tiny, or really, really big, because it's confused with how far it is. If you used a more advanced device like a HoloLens, that thing's actually using infrared to decide how far away something is, but the device, a phone, all it has is just vision, and so if the vision conditions aren't great, then it has a really hard time. Okay, so just some example pictures I've taken. So this is my counter. Again, pets always end up on my pictures for some reason. That's Luna, or Schnooky, as we call her. Caesar, again, doesn't seem too impressed. So sometimes I'll just be walking around and I'll just throw the box down on the ground and take a picture. So I've got one at my friend's house, one at Taco Time in Redmond, which I like. My driveway, that was my son's soccer game, I just put them on the turf. Here's the Urim and Thummim in my kitchen, and you can notice that they're transparent, you can look through them. So again, last fall I was at John Whitmer, and Richard Bushman was there, and he's a great historian, but admittedly he's getting up in age, and his son was there to kind of be, crowd control in case anybody mobbed him and wanted to protect him. And I knew Dr. Bushman was going to speak on the gold plates, and I said, I want to show you something. So I showed him my app, and he didn't get it. His eyes got big, and he was confused, and he said, where do you get these images? So I think he recognized the characters from the characters document on the gold, and I said, no, these aren't images, it's a 3D model. And his son immediately got it and tried to help his dad explain to his dad what was going on. But he did think that was pretty cool. There's John Hamer, Community of Christ, historian on the left, and I showed him that as well and put that on his projector. I think if they're 60 pounds, the projector wouldn't survive that, but fortunately they're virtual. I put the gold plates at the temple lot in Independence. I went to the Church History Museum in December, which I, if you haven't been there, I highly recommend it. It's great. It's well done. And so I just tried doing some of my artifacts in there. The top, you've got my plates on the top and the their physical replica on the bottom. And I was pleased to see that our dimensions match almost exactly. So the great thing about AR is you can get physical dimensions really good. And that's harder than it sounds in computer science to make that work. But the dimensions are pretty close. The bottom, there's a little diorama that shows a log. It said Joseph Smith had to hide the plates in a log when people were trying to get them. And so I put my virtual plates in there and took a picture. And then again, on the right, the box, there's Moroni explaining to Joseph Smith about how he'll one day get the plates. And I put the Hilcomore box right there. And it looks really natural. Like, you could picture that being in the museum. Although, if it were real, you'd probably, people could fall on it. But virtually, it's fun to see how that looks. Yesterday, I went to, it's called Gilgal Sculpture Gardens, right, in Salt Lake. And that's a cool little place. For some reason, they've got a Joseph Smith Sphinx, and I don't really know the inspiration for that, but it's interesting. So I put the Hilcomora box in front of the Joseph Smith Sphinx, and I thought that looked pretty good. And then I'd never been there before. There's scriptures all over and these stones, and I found Moroni's promise. And so I put the plates down on Moroni's promise, and I flipped the very last page. So Joseph Smith said, you know, in Hebrew and Egyptian, you read opposite the way we do. So he'd flip all the plates to the left. And so I flipped the very last plate. I figured Moroni 10 would be on the very last plate before you get to the sealed portion. And so there's Moroni's promise with the last plate. And then I figured Sandra Tanner and Reza Aslan in the same slide, why not? So there's Sandra Tanner. I went and met her yesterday and showed her my model. She's got her own model that's made out of lead. That's super heavy. Like, yeah, obviously if it was lead, it would be way too heavy. I took that picture, and it was a woman standing behind me in line to get a picture with Reza Aslan last night. I showed that to her, and she was really excited. She wanted me to airdrop that picture to her, so she was glad to have that. And then I'm a fan of Project Zion. I see Brittany here from there, so I took a picture of that. So the application is available in the Apple Store. I did not do it on Android because I just was not happy with the quality. And maybe my device was just not good enough, but anyway. Are there any questions or comments?
I'm very curious about what you and others get out of this. I'm not a Mormon. Uh-huh. I'm not next
one. Right. I don't think so. I think it's interesting. I don't know if you're from the beginning. I showed, and Richard Bushman's been talking about this, how it's kind of, the gold plates have kind of captured the imagination even of non-Mormons, like it's in South Park. And he talks about I don't remember if it's a book or a play, and an angel comes to someone and gives them steel plates. And they have to decide if they're going to do what the angel asks or not. In this play, they decide not to. So there's something about the gold plates that capture the imagination. I think just in the restoration movement, if you've grown up with this stuff, it probably means more, right? It's probably more interesting than someone didn't grow up in the restoration.
I've heard a story once that Joseph Smith described the spectacles being a dimension for like a giant, like a large man.
Yeah, that's true. And multiple people said the spectacles were really large. I think there was the idea that the Nephites were very large. I don't know if you've ever heard of Zelph. They found a skeleton when they were walking around, and Joe Smith said it was a giant white Lamanite. And so I think they had this idea that Nephites were really big. And so, yeah, I think multiple people said the spectacles were oversized. I chose not to do that just because it might look weird and you couldn't look through them. So they're pretty normal size. Okay. Oh, sorry, one more.
How many people have downloaded it?
I don't know. I haven't looked for a while. It's not a lot. It's kind of a small market. Thanks. Thanks, Locke. Thank you. So, a few things. I first said, okay, I'm going to do a Facebook ad for this. So, on Facebook, it's kind of scary how targeted you can be. Like, it's kind of creepy how much they know about us. And so one of the criteria, I did Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that's easy. I think I did LDS Living, that's easy. And then I just chose the Book of Mormon. I said, what can go wrong with the Book of Mormon? And I started getting angry messages from evangelicals saying, why is this in my timeline? I hate Mormonism. I don't want anything to do with it. And then I'm like, okay, how did my targeting go so wrong? And I realized when I said the Book of Mormon, that meant the Book of Mormon musical. So these are fans of the Book of Mormon musical, and they're getting this stuff. And my ad, I'm trying to be very, like, in no way am I mocking the restoration with this stuff. Like, I'm actually a fan of this stuff. So I'm not, and once in a while I'll get, and so then I took the Book of Mormon out, and now I don't get any mocking comments on my ads. I get positive comments. Although I get some confused, like someone said, is this making fun of us? Like they were so used to not, they're so used to being made fun of. I said, no, it's not, like there's nothing here, I'm making fun of you, and this is just legitimately interesting. So I think most LDS have taken this positively.
Do you plan to develop this anymore, or are you done?
I think I'm done just because I've realized the market is small and people don't even want to pay a dollar for an app. People are so used to getting apps for free. I've considered making the gold plates free and the rest like paid, but I think the market's so small. I had some grand ideas. Like I had this grand idea. You know the great Arnold Freeberg picture with Samuel Lamanite on the wall, right? And they're shooting arrows. Like I thought, what if you put that whole thing like played out for real on your table and you could see like Samuel standing on the wall and arrows flying past him, right? And you could walk around this little diorama and look into the city and look at him. But I just thought, I'm never going to get the money I put in this, like not even close. So I figured I'm not going to spend any more time on it. If I'm going to do stuff, it's got to be something that's probably more worth it.
Well, if you decide to do anything more with it, so there is the Joseph Smith account in the Pearl of Christ, one of the most well-known accounts. Huh. He said that in the bottom of the box there was two stone tablets that everything was pressed on top of.
Yeah, I realized that, and I thought maybe, yeah. I didn't bother doing that just because I thought one stone is probably fine, and maybe it meant, I don't know. It seemed like a detail I didn't really, wasn't worth modeling, but you're right. That's a good point. Yeah, I thought about doing the Sword of Laban. I think that was seen by the three witnesses. And there's also another interesting account where they were returning the plates, and the hole opened up in the mountain, and there was, I think Brigham Young said there was wagon loads of plates in there, which is incredible. And there was daylight there. I remember years ago, Michael Ash, who's a Mormon kind of apologist, and I asked him about that. And he said, well, maybe they were transported in a vision or something, because we're pretty sure the Hill Cumorah is very solid. And it's a drumlin. It's made up of basically glacial deposits, and there's no way there could be a cave in there. But yeah, there's so many interesting accounts to try to piece together. Okay, great. Thanks. And if you ever see me around, I'm willing to take a picture of you with the plates or whatever you like to see. Thank you.